Hello, and welcome to the Joint State Policy Podcast. I'm Susan Elder. I work at Joint State Government Commission, where we focus on policy topics that have been sent to us by the Pennsylvania House and Senate. Thanks for listening into our discussion today. Today, I'm here with Allison Kobsiewicz.
Hey, Susan.
Hi, Allie. Allie's a policy analyst here at Joint State, and Glenn Passowitz.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Glenn. Glenn's our executive director. We're going to be talking a little bit today about House Resolution 180. And Glenn, I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of background information about that resolution.
Sure. Thank you, Susan. House Resolution 180 was sponsored by Representative Jake Wheatley of Allegheny County, and it directed us to study after-school programs in Pennsylvania and how they help young people and their families and the Commonwealth overall. It asked us to look at increases in positive behaviors, which include social and emotional learning, academic improvements, career readiness, 21st century skill building, which is, if you're not familiar with it, not what you might think it is. And it asked us to also look at how the programs can help decrease negative behaviors, such as violence and crime, adolescent pregnancy, substance use, truancy, and disengagement from school. The resolution also had us appoint an advisory committee. And because of the pandemic, we held all of our meetings through Zoom. And it was a new experience for us doing it that way. Normally, we have everybody in the same room, and you can kind of build on the synergy. This advisory committee was entirely done by Zoom.
We forged through.
And so Susan will have a few words about who was on our advisory committee.
It was a pretty broad group in the advisory committee, I would say. We had several superintendents, a board member and curriculum director, because these days schools are after-school program providers. And even when they aren't providers, sometimes they house the program or they work with the program provider to share information. We had a chief of police as well as a district attorney who came at it from such a different angle and shared such valuable insight. It was very much their desire to see these programs succeed because they spend their days working with kids when these programs have not succeeded or had interventions. We also had multiple providers, a couple from Allegheny County and then also some from Philly. So it was a geographic mix was what we were going for. Finally, we had a member of a statewide association, Poseidon. We have really great help from the Pennsylvania Department of Education who works with these programs and with federal guidelines.
And right. And just to add in to that, we had Boys and Girls Clubs of America, the Pennsylvania affiliates represented. We had the Y represented. The After School Alliance provided us with information and advice and assistance as well. So like Susan said, as with all of our advisory committees, we try to get a big geographic spread that includes all the stakeholders of the different facets of what we're taking a look at.
So before we go much further, could we spend a little bit of time talking about what an after-school program is? I know sometimes we're referring to it as OST or after-school. Glenn, can you kind of fill that in for us?
Sure. The resolution itself speaks to after-school programs, but as we got into the research, what we found is that the term that researchers tend to use more often is out-of-school time programs. So we abbreviate that as OST, and that would include before school, not only after school. It includes the whole spectrum of programs. They generally group OST programs into three categories, and those are the specialty programs, those that have a definite focus on an area of development. Say, for example, if it's an academic focus, there'd be a program that solely looks at computer programming and helping kids develop computer programming skills. It could be an athletic program, could be a specialty program that focuses on developing in a particular sport. There are also broader and other categories of general programs, and they provide a range of opportunities that address character development, social development, again, academic improvements, recreational and social activities, career readiness and such. And then there are the general academic programs that offer broad-based tutoring, homework help. Many times these programs will parallel their programming and their curricula with and to enhance the local school district's curricula. So they try to follow along with each other so that the kids are showing progress in the classroom that they're developing from their participation in the out-of-school time programs.
So there's a lot of different types of programs. There's also, very briefly, there's a lot of different types of funding for these programs. I think as we were talking to providers, what we were hearing is that it's a very complicated mix of funding. Just to break it down into, you know, taking a bird's eye view so it doesn't seem as complicated, there's federal and state funding streams. So that might be something like Title I or TANF or 21st century funding. And then programs look to private foundation funding, so fundraising, that type of thing, as well as parent fees. And they cobble those together to provide their funding streams.
Right. But one thing I think we should emphasize is that although the programs can try to pull different state dollars in from different sources, there is no dedicated funding stream in Pennsylvania for out-of-school time programs. There's nothing that's solely focused on funding the programs. So it's kind of a situation where they're trying to pull in from as many different sources as they can, running into some uncertainties because of funding cycles and budget cycles with their planning as they move through their own program years.
So data collection was also something we spent a fair bit of time focusing on. And because of federal government regulations and guidelines through the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, there's a lot of specificity, a lot of direction about what type of data requirements these programs need to provide. And the federal regulations are broken down into four categories or tiers of evidence based on what kind of data they can show, what kind of data they have collected and pulled together and they can show to justify this funding.
And one other item of note about, you know, the research that goes into OST programs is that there's difficulty in separating, say, as you would normally do in an experiment, a control group from an experimental group, where you would expose the experimental group to the program and then compare those kids' outcomes to the outcomes of kids who weren't in the programs. And there really isn't a lot of research out there that has this sort of an arrangement. So then they can use quasi-experimental data where they try to simulate what happens or between kids who get the programs and kids who don't. The population of students that are participants that are in programs changes a lot because, you know, kids join in, they go for a little while and then they drop out. Maybe they're in for several years, maybe they're in for several days. So it's sort of difficult to pin down in a traditional sense what the outcomes are of the programs.
Even with the more basic outcomes, if a state or program decides to collect more basic information like attendance and demographics, on top of those challenges that Glenn was mentioning, the expectations of data collected varies between different funding sources. So a standardized repository would have to be equipped to store information at varying levels of detail in different fields of information. And the repositories that some cities in Pennsylvania are beginning to use right now track attendance and participant demographics, but don't go far beyond that. And adding other data to track could amount to a daunting task for smaller programs who can't afford to pay one person specifically to focus on data collection.
There's a lot of challenges in these areas. There's some good research going on, though. One of the names that comes to mind is the Wallace Foundation has been studying data collection in OST programs and has been working with data collection providers, like the actual computer systems and how it integrates into the whole system. So one of the things that the resolution asked for Joint State to look into was outcomes, both positive outcomes that come out of OST programs and negative outcomes. Can we highlight a little bit of those?
Sure. So we'll start off with, I'll review what we had mentioned earlier, is the positive behaviors are social and emotional, social and emotional learning, academic improvements, career readiness, and 21st century skill building. Let's start off with the academics. We looked at, there's a federal program called the 21st Century Community Learning Centers. It's the federal funding that goes into OST programs, and it's focused on academics. So there are actually hundreds of grantees in Pennsylvania of this federal program. It's an academic improvement program. So generally speaking, participants showed improvements across their math and reading assessments. And these were measured as academic performance, homework completion, class participation, volunteering in class, their attentiveness, their behavior, and their motivation. All of these things showed improvements in the most recent state evaluation report based on 2017-2018 data. For example, 58% of students showed academic improvement after participating in a 21st century program. Other programs, you know, focus on what's called SEL, social and emotional learning. And that's where the kids are learning to develop and improve self-awareness, their social awareness, responsible decision-making, self-management, and their relationship skills. So, you know, all of the programs, and these would be the general programs, the Y, Boys and Girls Clubs, and some of the others like Sunrise in Philadelphia, they focus on, in a holistic approach, the growth of the child. And the curricula are designed based on the child's development, their age, and their maturity. So they become more complex as the child gets older through the programs. This is also starts at the younger ages, is career readiness. Programs will partner with local employers, and they develop programs where the kids will have an exposure to different careers when they're young. They get to learn about what different people do in their jobs. Or as they get a little bit older, maybe they start to have some hands-on experience. And these programs can provide internships, collaborate with job fairs. And so their eye can be frequently on developing career pathways. And they do tend to follow a progression as the kids age. So, you know, from exposure at a young age all the way up through practical hands-on opportunities, you know, to experience the different career options. And another one that is mentioned, another positive outcome, is a development of 21st century skills. Now, I admit when I first saw that, I was thinking 21st century skills involves how to use a cell phone, how to develop a web page. But it's not necessarily about using technology, but in developing skills that employers are looking for in the 21st century. These are skills that employers themselves define as learning, literacy, and life skills. So learning involves critical thinking, creative thinking, collaborating, and communicating in, you know, with modern technology and with each other. Literacy refers to understanding information and how it's presented, an awareness of the media, and an understanding of what the media is reporting and how it's being reported. And again, there's a technology component to that. And life skills refer to flexibility, taking initiative, developing social skills and productivity, and finally, leadership. So the OST programs strive to provide curricula that target these developments, and they do so sequentially as the children age and mature.
Thanks, Glenn. That's a review of the positive outcomes. The resolution also asked us to focus on some negative behaviors that out-of-school time programs decrease.
So when looking at reducing negative behaviors, we reviewed literature on reductions in violence and crime, adolescent pregnancy, substance use, attendance and engagement, and health-compromising behaviors. OST programs were found to have an effect on violence and crime because OST programs encourage social cognitive skill building and healthy relationships with adults, as well as keeping children supervised during the most dangerous hours of the day, between 3 to 7 p.m. Adolescent pregnancy can be reduced by OST program attendance because those at highest risk for teen pregnancy are those that are unsupervised for long periods of time. Adult supervision greatly reduces the risk of teen pregnancy. Career aspirations and academic pursuits also lower the risk of teen pregnancy, and these are two things that OST programs emphasize. Though there are specific programs designed to offer sex education, students in OST programming without a focus on sex education also reduces the risk of teen pregnancy. Substance use can be decreased with participation in OST programming for similar reasons as teen pregnancy and violence and crime. That unsupervised time between 3 and 7 allows students more time to be involved in criminal activity, including substance use. Studies from across the nation, from Alaska to Chicago to Vermont, show a decrease in substance use in program participants. OST programs specifically designed to deter substance use have also been found to be effective. Although increased attendance is not a broadly demonstrated significant result of all OST programming, quality programs in which students regularly attend for years at a time do report a decrease in absences. OST programming can also increase classroom engagement for students by connecting them with their passions and interests, which can in turn make schoolwork feel more relevant. And lastly, OST programs promote healthy eating and lifestyle choices, which can promote better student health throughout their entire life. Parents sending their children to OST programs overall value the amount of physical activity included and the quality of food provided to their children during that time.
Thanks, Sally. Now we're to our final topic, the ROI, the return on investment. Glenn, do you want to give us an understanding of that concept, just theoretically?
Sure. Return on investment analysis is widely used as a simple way to understand the value of an output or an outcome based on the inputs that are required to produce it. In other words, you have outcome divided by input equals ROI. And if you have an ROI of greater than one, that indicates that the outcomes have a benefit that exceeds the value of the input. So you're getting more out of it than you're putting into it. It's a way of, for policymakers to understand that their investment is worthwhile.
For our Pennsylvania ROI specifically, we assumed a $50 million investment of state funding into OST programming. We took the highest possible student cost provided to us by the Pennsylvania Department of Education, which was $2,300, to find a conservative estimate of the ROI. With a $50 million investment, 21,739 additional students can participate in OST programming. Since positive behaviors are more difficult to quantify and attribute monetary value to, we focused on the reduction of negative behaviors, and we chose adolescent pregnancy, violence and crime, high school dropout rate, and substance use. For each of these categories, we used previous studies to determine the reduction rates that OST programming can achieve, then applied these to the Pennsylvania negative behavior numbers. We multiplied the percentage of reduction of negative behaviors by the number of additional students attending OST programming to find the number of students that would be diverted from negative behavior. This number was then multiplied by the lifetime costs of these behaviors to determine the amount saved. The four categories were added up and then divided by the initial investment of $50 million to find an ROI of $6.69 for every dollar invested. A full breakdown of the formula and outcomes measured can be found in the ROI section of our report.
Another thing that we did was to take a look at the other states' ROIs from other states that had done similar studies. What we found was that the Boys and Girls Clubs of America had done a national study, and what they came up with was a return of $9.60 benefit for every dollar invested in their programs. The Boys and Girls Clubs of Pennsylvania figures can be derived from that just for the Pennsylvania programs, came up with an ROI of $8.50. And that was based on Pennsylvania's cost data using national economic benefit assumptions. Other states, Vermont, had a return of $2.18. And what they included was similar to ours. They included substance use disorder, school retention. And in this case, school retention means repeating a grade. So it's not actually preventing, say, dropout rates, but actually repeating a grade. They took a look at dropouts and high school graduation rate, the costs of juvenile and adult crime, and births to teens. Georgia came up with a return on investment of $2.64. Maryland came up with $3.36, and they based theirs on future taxable earnings and savings from reductions in juvenile and adult incarceration. Minnesota came up with an ROI of between $1.20 and $2.40. The reason it doubles was they made the assumption that if half of the funding comes from private or donated sources, that means that you're getting, in a sense, twice the benefit from the public dollars that are being invested. So in other words, if you're adding it all together, it's $1.20. But if you're not counting the private donations, then that return on investment increased to $2.40. Oklahoma did one, and they came up with a range of $8 to $12 for every dollar invested. They included in that the benefits of crime reduction. When benefits of crime reduction weren't counted, their ROI decreased to $3 for every dollar invested.
We're about out of time. Thanks for joining us for our conversation on the value of after-school care programs or the return on investment from OST programs in Pennsylvania. If you'd like more information about this topic, please check out our website. It's jsg.legis.state.pa.us, or you can find the link to the website in our show notes. The music for our podcast today is by Joseph McDade. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a nice day.